God has really blessed me. You know, he let me work in D.C., let me work with EIB in Hollywood, in Silicon Valley. And he's shown me through all those experiences that there is one problem and one solution, and that's why we do this show.
Welcome to A Disciple's View with Todd Herman.
When the God of the universe created the world, he didn't snap his fingers or wink his eye. The Lord spoke. He said, "Let there be light." Because we believe, we speak about the happenings in this world, mindful that our true home is with Jesus Christ and his kingdom. I'm Todd Herman. Welcome to A Disciple's View. Just a program warning, because I had a listener report to me that she really is uncomfortable when we talk about issues of the lies around transgenderism. I have to tell you something in the next segment. It is one of the most shocking juxtapositions that you're ever going to see out of a fallen separate country, in this case, the fallen separate country of Washington State. I also have to warn you that if you're someone who ever gives in to the fleshly desire to seek physical revenge against people who absolutely, undoubtedly, irreversibly seek to harm kids, not in terms of the lies of transgenderism, but literally in terms of being sexually assaulted or raped or groomed and molested by teachers, I'm going to share something with you. Out of that separate country of Washington State, that could get your flesh up into being tempted to seek revenge. And it is an unbelievably clear sign that the Democrats in fallen countries like that are absolutely set on erasing the boundaries that exist in terms of sexual contact between adults and kids, beginning in the schools. It is unconscionable. So that's just some programming warnings that's coming up. The fight over illegal immigration is a fight over the deep state. And you've heard the conversations about U.S. aid. Mike Benz is not getting enough credit for this. Mike was a former State Department operative. He was in the digital cyber tracking division of the State Department, and he left. And he's written a couple of different books. He is the creator of a model called The Blob. And that is just about how the federal government's digital color revolution seeking to topple countries and societies, how that is everywhere, the unpunishable blob. He has been cataloging what USAID has been for many years. So let's lay out what it had been doing with your tax money. Number one, USAID was set up to take U.S. values and export them globally. Why USAID? John Kennedy created it through executive order. John Kennedy had some good visions. He was absolutely committed to seeing peace between us and Russia, so much so that he wrote secret letters to the dictator of Russia, president of Russia, if you prefer, Soviet Union, seeking peace. We now have those letters. So it began with, one would say, perhaps a noble idea. Over the past decade, it's become a money laundering device. So you take tax dollars and you point them to USAID. Past that, USAID then takes them and gives them to non-governmental organizations. Now you have two layers of separation. And each time you pass that money on, that dollar becomes less. So your taxed dollar, bureaucrats pay themselves to process that dollar, pay themselves retirement and bonuses and healthcare, pensions. They pass that dollar on to USAID, and those government employees pay themselves dollars, retirement, vacations, healthcare, bonuses. They then take that money and they pass that on to third entities. Like in some cases, as I understand it, according to Mike Benz and others who've done the investigation, Bill Kristol, who likes to pretend to be a conservative journalist, my judgment. He ends up with some of this money, a lot of it, actually. But each time, there's skimming. We are $300 trillion in debt. It's not 30 trillion, it's not 40. The off the books number is 300. This is money laundering. Very simple money laundering. So for what? Well, to drive more illegal immigration. To hire DAs in our country who will not charge illegal immigrants with crimes. They'll not allow ICE to deport them. They won't charge them with things like DUIs, which can put them in prison and therefore be subject to deportation. That's among some of what USAID did. There's a lot more. It's a money laundering system. And it is being used to take our country down. On the topic of illegal immigration alone, we can look at some patterns. President Trump announced some tariffs. They're going to start in 48 hours. 25% against Mexico, 25% against Canada. Lo and behold, the president of Mexico said, hey, pause, wait a minute. I'll give you 10,000 troops on the border. I'll start enforcing this. We will fight the cartels at the border. We will fight fentanyl from coming into your country. President Trump paused the tariffs. Funny thing about Canada, same thing happened there. When President Trump announced these tariffs, the stock market took a hit, pretty significant one, for about a day, a pretty significant dip, and then it came back. Here's what Justin Trudeau, the young dictator of Canada, wrote on social media. I just had a good call with President Trump. Wait a minute. What, you're not saying Orange Hitler? What happened to Orange Hitler? I just had a good call with President Trump. Canada is implementing our $1.3 billion border plan, reinforcing the border with new choppers, technology and personnel, enhanced coordination with American partners, and increased resources to stop the flow of fentanyl. Nearly 10,000 frontline personnel are and will be working on protecting the border. In addition, Canada is making new commitments to appoint a fentanyl czar. We will list cartels as terrorists, ensure 24/7 eyes on the border, launch a Canada-U.S. joint strike force to combat organized crime, fentanyl, and money laundering. I've also signed the new intelligence directive on organized crime and fentanyl, and we will be backing it with $200 million. Proposed tariffs will be paused for at least 30 days while we work together. Now, I don't necessarily trust Justin Trudeau, but I'm watching and pattern recognizing with Trump, and the president's serious. The left radicalized him. They did. I don't like rule by executive order. Makes me very nervous. And in a desperate situation where we are pushing back against some profound extremism, we might need to take some desperate measures as Abe Lincoln did. Abe Lincoln rescued the Republic by temporarily abusing the Constitution. I hope it's temporary. I pray it's temporary. Do you remember after the election in 2020 when the elites could not stand that they didn't know that they'd stolen the election from us? They couldn't stand it. Now, it's not been proven it was stolen. I believe it was. I know it was rigged. Remember when they bragged about that in Time magazine? How a group of elites saved democracy by rigging an election? I mean, that's not the headline, but that's what they were talking about. There was a little mention in there, and it had to do with, don't make us call out the mob. Don't make me call my cousin Vinny. No, it was in the article that these corporate CEOs, these think tank people, these government people, these State Department people, these leftist lawyers, members of the Mockingbird media, all got together, all worked to create these drop boxes and force mail-in voting. And as Stalin said, I don't care who votes, I care who counts the votes, all of that. They also said in that same article, they'd been in contact with direct action activists. Direct action. That means kinetic action, street action. Sometimes it's protests. Sometimes it's riots. Sometimes it's burning down cities. Sometimes it's taking over entire cities. There are firms in Washington, D.C., and I could take you to their websites, where you can go today and hire protesters. A lot of times they're Teamsters who protest on behalf of unions, but they are hireable. They'll go protest on your behalf too, all around the country. So I'm watching as the deep state starts that speed dial process. See, they were ready during the 2020 election. If they didn't succeed in rigging it, they said in that article, they were prepared to call for street action. If they weren't successful in rigging it, they intended for there to be riots all around the country. Anthony Cabasa has covered these street actions in Los Angeles mostly for about 7 years. He just wrote this. This is over the weekend. I've never in my 7 years of covering protests across the nation, but especially in Los Angeles, witnessed what I just saw right now. Journalists are puzzled as to what happened. And prior to that, he'd written this with a picture of a takeover of downtown Los Angeles. You probably saw this. People took over a freeway, trapped people in their cars, wouldn't let them get home, wouldn't let them get to work, wouldn't let them get to the hospital, wouldn't let them do anything because they chose to. In this case, it looks like downtown Los Angeles. Here's what he wrote. Update. As LAPD were about to make arrests, all of the police officers just left. I've never seen anything like this. Hundreds of police officers with zip ties and all of them just left. No arrests. Protesters shout in victory as police leave the area. Was it a virus? No, it was an order. It was a stand-down order. Let them have the city. Now, do I know that? No. But I've seen this before. Remember this. The so-called police chief in Los Angeles pledged his support to criminal cartels. He said he would fight against Trump immigration reform and ICE. He wouldn't let it happen. I've seen this before. When I was in Seattle and they took over six blocks of downtown Seattle, Antifa and Black Lives Matter Incorporated, I talked to people who were in Beirut. I talked to a guy who was in Ireland during the Troubles. And he said he called by show, and he'd called before, and we'd met at events, and he's real. He saw men in unmarked trucks driving around downtown Seattle, stopping police officers from arresting people. I'm saying a truck full of men with guns rolling up to where police were about to arrest protesters and jumping out of their truck. I watched protesters allowed to destroy, burning, smashing, destroying the equipment of 40 or so Asian-owned businesses. Those business owners had nothing to do with George Floyd. I watched rapes and murders. Well, I didn't watch them. I watched the murders via video. I saw the results of the rapes, all in an autonomous zone. Then there was the night that I decided as a media person to go in to the occupied zone. And there were guys from the John Brown Gun Club, which is an Antifa offshoot, with their ARs, who tried to stop me. I started to walk in the park. They said, "You're not going in there." I said, "Hey, if we're going to have a gunfight, let's do." And the guy said, "Is that worth dying for?" I said, "Yeah, it is. It is. Yes, my First Amendment right is worth dying for. I've seen this before. This was phoned in." We'll come back and be in the world and not of it. Be mindful of the warning I issued. You're not going to believe this stuff. I'm Todd Herman. This is A Disciple's View. Appreciate you listening to Disciples View. I'm Todd Herman. God is a God of order and not chaos. It's evident in the way our planet functions. It's evident in the beautifully written DNA and human genome. It's evident in the designs of our bodies that result from the DNA and the genomes. It's evident in the ease with which biologists were able to categorize animals into mammals and reptiles and amphibians, fish, birds. It's evident in the way night always follows day. It's evident in the balance of the gases we need. It's evident in the writing, in the Bible, the organization thereof, the pronouncements that the Lord Jesus would come, him being mentioned continually throughout the Bible until he came. It's evident in the way God designs the Bible both to manage our horizontal relationship with him and our lateral relationship with others. It's evident in that it covers everything from family to business to loans to sexual behavior to how we can even program our own minds. Because God designed in us this neuroplasticity where we can, in fact, control our own minds. It's a beautiful thing to have a God of order, not chaos. And the other side in this spiritual battle is chaos. It's brutal chaos. And it's never more evident to me than when I look at the fallen countries. I call Washington State and Oregon and California separate countries because they have no relationship to the United States of America other than a landmass and rhetoric. In the way that they are bossed, they have no relationship to this. We're going to talk about some extremes. Extremes on the left and then some extremes in churches that just hurt my heart in terms of the churches. Because I continue to have great pain for the American church making it easy for false heretical churches to keep same-sex attracted people away from God. It just hurts me so bad. Let's start with something that happened at an event for the candidates to be the chair of the Democrat National Committee. And that panel was largely white men, a few women, and I think one person of color is worth to call people. I just so reject terms of categorization in that way. At this DNC event, every candidate for DNC chair blamed their loss in 2024 on racism and misogyny.
I have a show of hands. How many of you believe that racism and misogyny played a role in Vice President Harris's defeat?
Every hand went up.
Okay. So, that's good. You all pass.
Jonathan Capehart from Public Broadcasting. Yeah, you pay him. You're forced to pay him because it's so good. You always force people to do good with their money, right? They didn't blame extremism. I've been having a series of conversations with some people, two of whom I hadn't talked to in years. One was through Facebook Messenger. The other was an actual conversation. Guy I worked with in the advertising world, lives in Manhattan proper, reached out to me and said, hey, can you help me understand? We haven't talked in years. I've always known you to be a really good, like, sound thinker. Would you mind popping on a call or a video with me and just helping me understand the Trump phenomena? We did. Phone call. And he started by saying, hey, just help me understand your vote for him. I said, can I reverse that, Jeff? Please? He said, sure. I said, help me understand your concern. He goes, well, I'm Jewish. I know. Well, I've just studied a lot about 1930s Germany, and I'm really concerned. Okay. I've studied it too. May I ask a couple of questions? Mm-hmm. How concerned with you were you about when New York City was taken over, part of it, by Antifa and Black Lives Matter? Well, it was certainly inconvenient. We couldn't go to the office and it was inconvenient. Okay. It was more than inconvenient for me. And I went through and talked to him about how their activities mapped up to Mao Zedong's phases of insurrection. And he found that interesting. And I talked to him about the weaponizing of the DOJ. And he found that interesting. And then I came back around to, Jeff, you do know that the tools they used against me, censorship, making me not say things in the radio, and against people on my ideological spectrum, putting them in prison for standing outside the Capitol on the lawn. You do know those are tools of totalitarianism, right? And to his credit, he agreed. And then he said, Todd, I'm just worried about all the executive orders and the scapegoating. I said, scapegoating. He goes, yeah, the brown people. Trump has made them the enemy. I said, okay, I can see how you feel that way. I can. And if I believed that was the case, I would be deeply concerned. I think illegal immigration is what he's fighting. I said, and Jeff, I watched the Democrat Party make single white men, or pardon me, straight white men, so-called, the single most dangerous thing in the world, straight white men. And to me, that was pure racial pandering. I think the phrase Black Lives Matter is racial pandering. I think the phrase BIPOC is racial pandering. I think DEI is racial pandering. I think it's a tool of division. I think that the target in this case was white men. So, Jeff, it sounds like you and I have the same concern. I'm less concerned about Trump, maybe because he's doing things I like, and maybe because Joe Biden and the people who ran him did things you like. So there we are, two extremes. Where Jeff and I agreed was two places. One, about the anti-Semitism on college campuses. He has a daughter at Columbia. Pulled her out. When it became self-evident that Columbia is an anti-Semitic organization that allows Hamas terrorists to rule the day sometimes, to take people captive. Jeff pulled his daughter out that day. I'm not going to have my Jewish daughter going to that school. You're about to hear something I knew was coming. And it has to do with Washington State. It has to do with the sexual abuse of children. I am giving you a heads up. There's no discussion of body parts or activities in any vivid way in this. It's policy. But the policy is so utterly disturbing for people who didn't see this coming. I can go back and grab samples of radio shows from, 6 years ago, where I said, this will be the logical result of what Democrats are doing in the schools with their perverse pornographic sex ed. So it's in Democrat-owned and Democrat-operated Washington State. Democrats unanimously rejected an amendment that would require schools to immediately contact a child's parents if they were found to have been sexually abused by a teacher.
The underlying bill essentially states that schools can wait 48 hours before they tell parents if their children were involved in any kind of criminal action or if there was any sexual misconduct of staff. We have seen a stunning amount of sexual misconduct and sexual assaults by educators in our schools just in the last year itself, including two principals in a Vancouver school district that hid from parents a rape, a statutory rape of a 16-year-old female student in their school by one of their staff. Now, as a parent myself, I would be disgusted and sickened to know if my kids had some kind of sexual abuse put upon them by staff, and I wasn't notified immediately of those things. Now, this happened actually in my kid's school district, where an eighth grade school teacher was grooming and having inappropriate sexual relationships with eighth grade boys. This is all too much commonplace, and parents deserve to know right away whenever there is any kind of criminal activity or sexual abuse or sexual allegations of staff that goes along with the safety of their children. For God's sake, please vote yes.
100% of Democrats voted no. 100% of Republicans voted yes. Again, here was the amendment's proposal. If a principal or another school official learns that a teacher has been sexually abusing a student, that that teacher or official contact the parents immediately. They voted no. Give the pedophile a 48-hour notice, effectively. What has happened in the schools was something so easily predicted. If you were, say, building a gym, and you wanted to get in the gym business, and you wanted to have a particular culture of a gym, you might start a gym with a bunch of mirrors, and you might have a bunch of pictures of shirtless men and women in revealing clothing, and you might have certain types of music, and you might have the locker room clearly visible to the openings to the bathrooms, and you can create a certain form of gym which is all about temple of the flesh. On the other hand, you could have a gym with no mirrors, with black walls, with posters that show proper form and body movement, and where you have standards as to how people dress within the gym. One gym is a place where you work out, the chief fitness. The other is, yeah, you can get fit, and you are also shopping for flesh. In the case of the separate country schools in Washington State, they prepped the environment to welcome in men and women who seek to sexually exploit children. They literally prepped the environment. Let's think about this. If your end goal is to have pedophiles in your school system, what would you do? First thing I would do is allow pedophiles to come in and do what pedophiles do. I create a system where people who are pedophilic could come in and, under cover of administrative law, secretly tell kids about their sexual fantasies. After all, it's just education. Where they could read to kids pornographic material. And if the parents said stop, the school could say no. No, we're not stopping. That's prepping an environment. Then, the next step to me would be having the kids write papers about their sexual fantasies or sexual activities, but not to the parents. Then I would, in my curriculum, say to kids, don't talk to your parents if they're Christian and conservative about your sexual desires. Talk to a trusted adult at school secretly, and they won't tell your parents. It's literally what pedophiles do. And now we have, in the separate country of Washington State, affirmation that Democrats do not want parents immediately notified if their children are sexually assaulted. Now, do you see why I gave you these warnings? Particularly, I think, the men in the audience. I know how I would feel. I know what my flesh would seek to do if I learned that a man had inflicted himself upon my daughter in elementary school or grade, any school. I know what my flesh would want to do. Oh, incidentally, speaking of this, this is from one county in that separate country of Washington State, Pierce County. Pierce County is where the state started allowing men to shower with girls. It was at the Pierce County YWCA where they started that all. There has been there's been $52 million paid out to resolve sex abuse allegations in Pierce County school districts over a decade, much of it in the past 4 years. This is according to court records and attorneys who represented several plaintiffs. University Place is a district near Tacoma, Washington, one of the major cities, $15,625,000. Puyallup, $14,900,000. Summer Bonney Lake, $7,850. Tacoma proper, $6 million. to settle sex abuse charges. Now, we don't get to know who the teachers were. Hey, that's just like Congress. Congress has a, what, $17 million slush fund to pay off sexual abuse allegations? It's almost like this is what Democrats do. Here's the juxtaposition I mentioned in the first segment. This is, I think, just utterly, utterly brutal. In that separate country of Washington, this is from my friend Julie Barrett, who runs an organization, Conservative Ladies for America. In Washington, children can, and forgive the brutality here, children can cut off their genitalia before they turn 18, and they'll even hide it from the parents. Parents will be forced to pay, but they won't be able to stop it. But if your teenage son wants to have some mass building casein protein, a mass builder for weightlifting, you can't have it till you're 18. Senate Bill 5622 would prohibit sales of dietary supplements to people under the age of 18. Can it be more clear what the left has become? We come back. I want you to hear what a leftist church is doing, they say, for people they refer to as queer. I say to them. I'm Todd Herman. This is The Disciples View. Listening to Disciples View, I'm Todd Herman. A couple things to get done before we get into the Tower Babbling and wrap up the show with a personal note. One is an area that, man, God is pressing down on me, and he's causing me some pain. I'm stumbling as I'm trying to be helpful here. I'm stumbling and unintentionally hurting friends and family as I speak about this. Just it's really proving to be a hard calling. And it has to do with what's called the gay gospel. And I feel a great weight on my chest to help the American church create, we were talking about prepping an environment in a negative case, all right, negative use case. And I want to prep the environment in the American evangelical church, I'm an evangelical, to be a place where same-sex attracted people can come and be broken and seek healing. I use that phrase, same-sex attracted versus gay, because same-sex attracted speaks to an emotion, not an identity. We don't go around calling ourselves opposite-sex attracted people. We don't introduce ourselves as, hi, I'm an opposite-sex attracted man, because it's a feeling. And people who are same-sex attracted are much more than that. But the world wants to convince them that they are only that. And that makes them very fragile, in my judgment. The process for getting and saving the souls of same-sex attracted people starts with a recognition of something that most people never really imagine. I want you to imagine a circumstance where you are 18 or 19 and the world says to you, you can never have sexual union with anybody, ever. Is that an easy pill? Is that a simple cross to carry? It is not. And if you're saying it is, maybe you forget what it is to be 18 or 19. Be 30 or 40. And have your pastor say to you, you can never have sexual contact. Now, maybe you have been someone who's been single for years and you hear this and say, hey, you know what? You can learn to do that. Perhaps you're a priest or nun and you've been sacred to your vows. If so, God bless you. So difficult. This is what same-sex attracted people hear. I know that there are people who become same-sex attracted later in life. I know that there is downward pressure in society, particularly with girls, to be same-sex attracted, to be anything but a straight white girl. I know that. I also know once people give in to that, then that becomes who they are, and then there's that label gay. But we in the evangelical church, at least, because I am an evangelical, need to confess it's a very difficult thing we're asking you to do. To say no to this particular sin, the activity, not the feelings, but the activity, then the feelings, because if you look at someone with lust in your eyes, you've already committed the act. We as men particularly need to say, I don't know if I could do that. That's tough. If we don't do that, we're going to fail to bring same-sex attracted people into the churches and therefore fail to bring them to Jesus. And on Judgment Day, though we're saved, on Judgment Day, Jesus may well say, why did you leave my sheep? My sheep who struggled with same-sex attraction, why did you leave them? And we'll end up with situations like this. A so-called church created a separate so-called Christmas called Queer Christmas.
And welcome to our fourth annual Queer Christmas service. This is my favorite queer worship of the year because our ministry here at Trinity United began with Queer Christmas 4 years ago. And so it's a really special time for our community. And
please join me in the call to worship. Blessed be the non-conforming one, God who took on flesh, the oppressed of an immigrant, of an infant, whose family and birth was anything but traditional. This Holy One won't be hindered by social norms. She defies our expectations. She challenges our preconceptions. She awakens us to new possibilities. Praise be to God, the queerest of us all. Come, let us walk in this good way. Let us belong to one another, just as we belong to God.
We light the first two candles symbolizing the gifts of the Spirit this season. The first candle that Claire is lighting now is the candle of hope. As queer people, we know that God is with us, especially when our hopes are dashed by human ignorance, hate, or indifference.
The second candle is the candle of peace. As queer people, we know God is on the side of peace, and that peace in the world begins with action. We know by the light of this flame that God is urging us to keep our communities strong, to reach out to one another, and to stand, work, and act in solidarity for those who continue to cry out to peace.
You notice that they pretend that God is presented in the female sense. You'll notice that God is affirming of that sin. That is how the gay gospel, in my judgment, is drawing people away from God, but giving them the illusion that they're with him. We have got to change this. We'll skip this thing. We're going to do Randy with Selena Gomez. We'll get to that later. We've got to roll into the Tower Babbling. On this program, we thank the Lord for placing supposedly wise people on tall towers of shaking sand with our feature called the Tower Babbling.
You know about the biblical truth of the Tower of Babel. A Disciple's View presents The Tower of Babbling.
Is it a boy or a girl? It's a they by Lindsay Harriet. This book is all about welcoming a new baby into the family and not knowing how that baby will identify when they grow up. So we're not going to be assuming their gender.
Three sound bites in today's Tower of Babbling. And we'll start with this. It's here. What was I doing, Randy? I'm such a silly man. Democrat leader Hakeem Jeffries wants people back in the streets.
We are going to fight it legislatively. We are going to fight it in the courts. And we're going to fight it in the streets.
And when they say that, they're doing that in the streets. They just did that in Los Angeles in the streets. But don't worry, it's not an insurrection or anything like an insurrection. Soundbite number two is today's Tower Babbling. Mayor Pete, The former DEI chosen so-called Secretary of Transportation took a break from working on highway equity and degendering street signs to talk about a problem it was his job to address.
How concerned are you?
I'm very concerned. We watch these things very closely. If you look at the last decade or so, you would see between 10 and 20 times a year, typically, that this would happen. This year, we're on track to have more than 20, and even one is one that I would not like to see happen.
He's talking about plane crashes. And, of course, we know that that's President Trump's fault, right? No, we've heard that on MSNBC. These latest accidents happened about 8 days after President Trump took office, but clearly his fault. Last soundbite in today's Tower Babbling, NBC's Jacob Soboroff and Orporn Borders Zealot explained to Orporn Borders Zealot and alleged comedian Stephen Colbert that walls, guns, troops, drones, and strict enforcement of laws do not deter anyone from sneaking into the country.
Joe Biden promised a departure from that system, a fair, safe, humane, and orderly system. But really what they ended up doing is lean into these aggressive policies in order to continue to scare people away. They think it works. And let me just tell you, deterrence doesn't work. If it worked, people would stop coming to this country, and people still are leaving desperate circumstances from all around the world for a better life in the United States of America. It's time for a new approach.
Just so you know, I've been to that studio where they filmed that. And you have to have ID, two forms. You have to be on the guest list in advance. There are armed guards, particularly as you enter the studio, just because it doesn't work. And that's a wrap for today's Tower Babbling.
Young black kids growing up in the Bronx who don't even know what the word a computer is. They don't know. They don't know these things.
That was the Tower of Babbling on A Disciple's View.
On a personal note today, what a magnificent thing to see growth spurts in young men. It really is a magnificent thing. A few weeks ago, we decided in youth group, it was a weird night. Our regulars didn't come. There's some kids we can always count on to be there, and they didn't come that night. The kids who are less frequent in attendance, and I would say sporadic, all came. Now, there's fewer of them. We're blessed with a good number of kids who attend all the time. And there's fewer of these sporadic attenders. So I decided to change the environment. My partner I work with on this, John, was not there. John is a very, very in the spirit 18-year-old guy. His heart is in ministry. It's where he just feels called to be. So we met downstairs on couches. And the change in environment was purposeful, because I wanted a change in approach, because it was just us. And in that conversation, I asked the boys to hear me out on something. And I said, have you guys heard the phrase, iron sharpens iron? And they said, yep. What's it mean? And so the boys went around and talked about what they thought it meant. Where does it come from? And they guessed the Bible. Mm-hmm. Can you tell me how Christian men can sharpen Christian men? One of the brothers raised his hands. These are ninth grade boys. And said, yeah, calling us out. What's that mean? I'm trying to get better at asking questions. He said, well, when you're getting something to do something super bad, just saying, bro, don't. Right. Okay. Bro, don't what? One of the boys said, I did something I could have used help on. Okay? You want to share? And he confessed to sexual sin. And being ninth grade boys, some of the boys started to laugh. I said, hey, can I pause for a second? Are you confessing or bragging? Oh, no, I'm not bragging. No, I didn't want to do it. And then the boys really laughed. I said, guys, that's real. That's real. Satan knows how to tempt us, and past a certain point, sometimes the thinking is clouded. I said, what are you asking us to do? Well, iron sharpens iron. Hold me to account. Okay. What does that mean? Don't let me see her anymore. Physically stop you? No. Just like call me out. Are you giving us license to do that? He said, what's that mean? I said, are you giving us permission? Yeah. We got a status report. Oh my goodness. It's so cool when boys grow and there's these growth spurts. So I was walking in to the group that night, to the building rather, long before the group. We have a leaders meeting beforehand. And that young man came up, pulled me aside. He had tears in his eyes. I said, you are not good right now. No. No, I'm chilling. I go, really? You're chilling with tears in your eyes? Yeah. So my girlfriend and I are over. Oh, that's heavy. Yeah. She says I don't love her. Why'd she say that? I told her we couldn't do stuff anymore. Sexual things? Yeah. She says you don't love her. Yeah. How do you think she defines love? Like that. How do you want to define it? Like Jesus? Do you think you could write her a paper card? Not a text. Like maybe you shouldn't text her because she blocked me. Okay. Do you think you could write her a paper letter and hand it to her? She might not read it. But maybe you could think of some scripture about how you want to love like Jesus loves. Man, such an honor to watch God work through a goof like me to do his work. In the beginning was the Word was with God, and the Word was God. Because we believe, we speak. Because he first loved us, we speak his Word. We walk in the path of Jesus Christ to make disciples of all nations until God gives us permission to speak again together. May his peace, which transcends all understanding, wash over you and your families. On behalf of Randy and AFR, I'm Todd Herman. This has been A Disciple's View.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.